I don't know. No one seems to know. It couldn't be anybody else, Fuchs growled. Nodon agreed with a nod. Down at the South Pole, you say? They captured her down there? That's part of the story. Some say she has run off with a lover. Pancho wouldn't do that. She wouldn't have to. If she wanted a lover, she'd do it right here in Cellini, where she's safe. Nodon said nothing. It's got to be Humphreys, Fuchs muttered, as much to himself as his companion. He's probably having her taken to his mansion down below. Do you think so? Even if he hasn't, that's where he is. We've got to get in there, and quickly. Daniel Tsavo tried to hide his nervousness as he toured Pancho through the construction areas and finally down into the finished section of the Nairobi base, where he and the other corporate executives resided. It was blessedly quiet down at this lowest level. The constant battering noise of the 24-hour-a-day construction was muffled by thick, airtight hatches and acoustical insulation. As they walked along the carpeted corridor toward the executive dining room, Tsavo kept Pancho on his right, as he had done all through the brief tour, so that he could hear the micro-receiver embedded in his left ear without being obvious about it. It troubled him that Nobuhiko Yamagata himself was speeding to the base on a high-G rocket from Japan. The interrogation team had already arrived, but their work was suspended until Yamagata arrived. Pancho, meanwhile, was trying to sort out in her mind everything she had seen in this brief tour of the unfinished base. It's enormous, she thought. They're not just building the Phase One facility here, they're putting up a whole city all in one shot. This place will be just as big as Cellini. Tsavo tried hard not to hold his left hand up to his ear. He was waiting for news that Yamagata had arrived, waiting for his instructions on what to do with Pancho. Pretty fancy setup you guys have for yourself, Pancho teased as they walked along the corridor. Its walls were painted in soothing pastels. The noise of construction was far behind them. Nice thick carpets on the floor and acoustic panelings on the walls. Rank has its privileges, Tsavo replied, making himself smile back at her. Guess so. Where are they getting the capital for all this, Pancho wondered. Nairobi Industries doesn't have this kind of financial muscle. Somebody's pouring a hell of a lot of money into this. Humphreys? Why would the Humper spend money on Nairobi? Why invest in a competitor? Especially when he's sinking so much into this goddamn war. I wouldn't be able to divert this much of Astro's funding. We'd go broke. Actually, Tsavo said, scratching at his left ear, all this was not as expensive as you might think. Most of it was manufactured at Cellini. Really? Truly. Pancho seemed impressed. You know, back in the early days of Moon Base, they thought seriously about putting grass down in all the corridors. Grass? Yep. Life support people said it had helped make oxygen, and the psychologists thought it would make people happier about having to live underground. Did they ever do it? Nah. The accountants ran the numbers for how much electricity they'd need to provide light for the grass, and the maintenance people complained about the groundskeeping they'd have to do. That killed it. No grass. Except up in the main plaza, of course. Tsavo said, we plan to sod our central plaza, too, and plant trees. Uh-huh, said Pancho. But she was thinking, if Humphreys isn't bankrolling Nairobi, who is and why? The receiver in Savo's ear buzzed. Mr. Yamagata is expected in 2 hours. There is to be no interrogation of Ms. Lane until after he has arrived. Proceed with dinner as originally planned. At that precise moment, Pancho asked, say, when's dinner? I haven't had anything to eat since breakfast. Perfect timing, Tsavo murmured, stopping at a set of double doors. Using both hands, he pushed them open. Pancho saw a conference room that had been transformed into a dining room. The central table was set for 8, and there were 6 people standing around the sideboard at the far end of the oblong room where drinks had been set up. 2 of them were women, all of them dark-skinned Africans. Tsavo introduced Pancho to his Nairobi Industries colleagues, then excused himself to go to the next room for a moment, where the servers waited with a group of 6 Japanese men and women. No drugs, Tsavo told their chief. We'll have a normal dinner. We can sedate her later.
Tort ship Elsinore. Doug Stavanger rode with Edith all the way to the Tort ship, waiting in a tight orbit around the moon. He went with her through Elsinore's airlock, as the ship's captain personally escorted his passenger to her quarters, a comfortable little cabin halfway down the passageway that led to the bridge. Once the captain had left them alone and had slid the passageway door shut, Stavanger took his wife in his arms. "You don't have to do this, Edie," he said. "Yes, I do," she replied. She was smiling, but her eyes were steady with firm resolve. "You could send someone else and have him report what he finds to you. You could stay here at Cellini and produce the news show or documentary or whatever. Doug," she said, sliding her arms around his neck, "I love you, darling, but you have no idea of how the news business works. I don't want you risking your neck out there. But that's the only way to get the story. And there's a solar storm approaching, too," he said. "The ship shielded, darling." She nuzzled his nose lightly, then said, "You'd better get back to Cellini before the radiation starts building up." He frowned unhappily. "If something should happen to you, what a story it would make." She smiled as she said it. "Be serious." Her smile faded, but only a little. "I'm being serious, Doug. The only way to break this conspiracy of silence is for a major news figure to go to Ceres and report on the situation firsthand. If Cellini broadcasts my story, it'll be picked up by Independence on Earth. Then the Earthside nets will have to cover it. They'll have no choice. And if you get killed in the process..." "I won't," she insisted. "I'm not going to go out into the belt. I'll stay at Ceres. On the habitat the rock rats have built for themselves, where it's perfectly safe. That's one of the tricks of this business. Give the appearance of being on the front line, but stay at headquarters, where it's safe." Stavanger tightened his grip around her waist. "I really don't want you to go, Edie." "I know, dearest. But I have to." Eventually he gave up and released her. But all the way back to Cellini on the little shuttle rocket, all the way back to his home in the underground city's third level, Doug Stavanger could not shake the feeling that he would never see his wife again. He told himself he was being a foolish idiot, overly protective, overly possessive, too. Yet the feeling would not leave him.
Two ships left Cellini, heading toward the belt. Elsinore, carrying Edith Elgin, was going to the habitat Chrysalis in orbit around the asteroid Ceres. Cromwell, an Astro Corporation freighter, was ostensibly going to pick up a load of ores that she would tote back to Cellini. Both ships turned on their electromagnetic radiation shielding as soon as they broke orbit around the moon. The vast and growing cloud of energetic ionizing radiation that had been spewed out by the solar flare soon engulfed them both. Aboard Elsinore, the ship's crew and her sole passenger watched the radiation count climb with some unavoidable trepidation. Aboard Cromwell, the crew counted on the radiation cloud to shield their approach to Vesta. Cromwell carried no human passengers, of course. Its cargo was a pair of missiles that carried heavily insulated warheads of nanomachines, the type commonly called gobblers. Unable to communicate with Cromwell and equally unable to contact Pancho, Jake Wanamaker had nothing better to do but pace the communications center and glower at the technicians working the consoles. At last, he thumped himself down at an empty console and pulled up Pancho's messages. "Maybe there was something in here that can tell me what she thinks she's up to," he told himself, knowing it was just an excuse to engage in some busy work before he started smashing the furniture. A long string of routine calls, mostly from Astro offices or board members. But one of the messages was highlighted, blinking in red letters. A Carl Manstein. No identification. Just a call with no message attached. Yet it was highlighted. Wanamaker routed the call through Astro's security system, and the Manstein name